now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to a new Premiership season on the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm joined in the studio today by Alison Rudd and making his debut, Raoul Simons, and also from a remote location in Halifax, Ollie Kay. Coming up on the show, we'll be discussing the opening weekend of the Premiership, including Blackpool's incredible 4-0 win at Wigan. This from the club who were favourites to be relegated from the Championship just 12 months ago. And in our debate, we'll be getting down to all things Manchester City. With the type of signings they've made, are they now ready to step up to the next level? Or will this season be too soon for them? Join us for the next 35 or so minutes. Well, I think there's only one place to start this week, and that is with the team sitting second in the table. Blackpool, 4-0 winners against Wigan. Ollie, reactions?
Pretty staggered. Not staggered necessarily by the fact that Wigan were very poor, because I've been told that they weren't in very good shape, but staggered by Blackpool, first of all, winning, but winning so emphatically, 4-0 away from home against what is a settled, proven Premier League team, is just an amazing result. I mean, I think even Ian Holloway was talking the other day about, you know, we're not ready for this season. I don't think it was kidology or anything like that. I think he was just saying it as he thought it was, that he hadn't been able to strengthen the squad, that they were worse than when they came up, and lo and behold, they go to Wigan and win 4-0, and it looked like it probably could have been 5 or 6.
Alison, was it a case of Blackpool being really good or Wigan being atrocious? Because I saw some absurd defending from Wigan.
No, well, it was both. It was both, but I don't know. Let's not overanalyze it, because it was the most beautiful, beautiful start to the season. Blackpool have been labelled the team least prepared for Premiership football since the Premiership was started.
And that was by their own manager.
And everybody else. And I was up in Blackpool last week, and nobody there. The fans were talking about going to Wigan as being scary, and they were going for the day out and to enjoy themselves. And not a single person I could find thought they would actually get a draw, let alone win 4-0. And this is a place, Blackpool is a club where at the training ground until recently they had no cutlery, and the players were given spaghetti bolognese for lunch, and they had to drink the spaghetti bolognese out of a cup because there was no other means to eat it. And they have a chairman who does not believe in agents. They have a manager who's gone from the extreme of being rent a joke to trying so hard to look like a serious manager he sounds like he's got some sort of illness. And it is remarkable. It's remarkable. But if you did watch Blackpool in their run to Wembley last season, and I only saw them from time to time, they had something that is almost you can't really define what it is, but they look like, even if they're behind, they'll win. There's that something about them. They don't let that's the point. All this negativity that's surrounded the team, some reason there's a force field around them, and then within themselves they have this incredible optimism. And that's what struck me most about, I only saw the highlights of the match, but what struck me about it was that their bounciness. I mean, they looked like, the players themselves looked like, this is fun, we can do it.
I worked with Ian Holloway. You've known him for a long time. Do you have any inkling? Do you see this bounciness, this bounce back ability? I think somebody once called it. Do you have any insight?
I think Ian is a lot cleverer than perhaps he lets his public image be perceived as. He's very sharp. You can see what strategy he's going at with these pre-season comments, talking down Blackpool as much as possible, talking down expectations. In reality, he expects them to do a lot better than he's actually saying. And he knows from last year that he's got a side that can score goals. And I think a big thing about Blackpool is momentum. They finished the season in an incredible run of form. For whatever reason, they haven't been able to transform the squad. And I think they've kept that run going towards the start of this season. And they're building without circumstance meant they haven't been able to transform the team. So they're building with roughly the same nucleus, and it seems to be starting very well for them.
But that will get you so far at the start of the season, won't it? It'll come Christmas, then you'll realise you need to have bought people. But you can keep... There's nothing wrong with keeping the momentum going initially, is there?
Ollie?
I remember having a chat with Phil Brown two seasons ago where he was talking about the start that they'd made, and he'd had exactly the same thing... I'm talking about Hull City, of course. He'd had exactly the same thing... back in 2000 when he was assistant manager at Bolton when they got promoted, and they had a ludicrous win. I think it was 5-0 or 5-1 away to Leicester City on their first day in the Premier League. And he just said, he said that you can often catch teams cold on that first day. Nobody's really prepared. So if you're prepared to hit the ground running, you've still got that momentum from last season. You've got that belief and excitement and sort of enthusiasm that other teams perhaps don't have. He was saying that, you know, basically it's a case of just capitalising on other teams not being prepared. And he says that eventually, over the course of a season, you're inevitably going to... That sort of confidence that you've carried through is inevitably going to be worn away by the odd negative experience, whether it's half-time team talks on the pitch or whatever. But he, you know,
it's a low blow.
You can see how that would work, that you come up with momentum, you make a flying start that surprises everyone, and perhaps it keeps you going for another couple of weeks, but eventually over the course of the season, I mean, clearly, I mean, I think I read a press release from a bookmaker saying that Blackpool's title odds had been slashed to 2000-1 or something like that, and I think the fact that they were slashed to 2000-1 probably says that they're still... regarded as a team who, you know, will be caught up by gravity at some stage. But what a start. Unbelievable.
Okay, when we talk about teams like Blackpool, because let's admit, we're generally not that familiar with most of the players, you know, we tend not to single out individuals. And, of course, we all know Charlie Adam and Brett Ormerod and Marlon Harewood. But one guy who caught my eye, and I have to say, on Sunday morning, I was on Twitter and saw George Culkin tweet a picture of Phil Brown's shirt that he was wearing on Goals on Sunday. So I immediately tuned in, and I caught extended highlight to this game, which I could have seen in more compressed form the night before. But I was struck by this Elliot Grandin, this guy who looked almost Zidane-like at times. And I'm wondering, you know, again, this guy's 23, 24 years old. He was at CSKA Moscow last year, where he was basically a scrub. I go back to this. You mentioned something before about agents. How did Holloway find this guy? I mean, because it just seems such an unlikely signing. How does Holloway operate if he doesn't like agents and his boss doesn't like agents?
I think from the QPR time when I knew Ian quite well, he would use agents, and it's an inevitable part of the game. He wouldn't know. He wouldn't have the foreign context necessarily personally to talk up this guy to particularly bring him to his attention. So it would be through agents. And at QPR there was a very high turnover of players from abroad as well as from the Football League. But most of Holloway's signings would be homegrown players because that's the league he knows, and he would look lower down the league. But I would have thought a player like this could have only have come through his agent contact.
Well, I'm looking at Blackpool starting 11, and I ask myself, you know, who isn't thoroughly mediocre in this team, at least on paper? And I don't come up with very many guys at all. You know, Charlie Adam looked good last year. Ollie, from what you've seen, can he play in the Premier League?
Charlie Adam, I think, is the one that, you know, you would probably say looks most equipped to make the step up. He was a great player for them last season, and in that run towards the end of the season. But, I mean, people like Taylor Fletcher and Ormerod, I think, are sort of honest pros, if that's not too patronising. But they've made an interesting signing from Man United, Craig Cathcart, central defender. He was sort of regarded as the next sort of bright young thing at United about 3 or 4 years ago, and he got an injury and he went away on loan somewhere and he didn't end up playing regularly. And I think, you know, he didn't really develop as United hoped he would do, but he's clearly got some of the materials to be a very good player.
Talk about Wigan. I actually thought, Roberto Martinez last year in his first year in the top flight, having to sell some important players, actually did quite well to stay up. He certainly spent money on a kid like Victor Moses, who may or may not turn out to be a player, but I really don't like what he did in the summer. I felt I'm not a big Antoine Alcaraz guy. Bozzelli is a gifted striker, but one with bad knees, who I certainly, the reason he's at Wigan now is because a lot of clubs looked at him and said, he's obviously very good, but he's not where he was before physically. Are Wigan going to be relegation threatened this year?
Well, it's the first time in the game history that... How many players got marked 2 out of 10? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 players got... And that is unbelievable. So, on the other hand, Wigan have just... You know, they're consistent, aren't they? Because last season, you never knew if the appalling Wigan were going to turn up or the ones who played fancy football with a bit of spirit were going to turn up. So, but I think everyone who was there is saying it's the worst they've seen a Premiership team play for a long time.
I think they seem quite a moody team. The results last year when they got hammered by Tottenham and by Chelsea, you kind of felt once they were behind, they really didn't have the character and they almost gave up. And I think there was probably an element of that on Saturday. And I think that's the big challenge for Martinez. Has he got the ability as a manager to create that mental strength that they're going to need?
Let's talk about a potential top four side and Arsenal. Liverpool and Arsenal, Sunday, all the hype, all the build-up. I was really excited to see Joe Cole in this new role, and I only got to see him for less than a half. Let's start with the sending off. Ollie.
Well, I think there was an awful lot of debate about it at halftime on the TV and, you know, in the press box as well, but... To be honest, I don't see where there was room for debate. If you look at the rules these days, they're about, you know, you could be sent off for a challenge that potentially endangers an opponent, even if you don't catch the opponent. It doesn't matter about your intention. It doesn't matter about malice. It doesn't matter about what your character normally is perceived to be when you hear about people saying he's not that kind of player. If it's a dangerous tackle, which that one was, then you get sent off. There's an argument to say perhaps Jack Wilshere could have been sent off for the challenge on Mascherano. I thought that was a slightly less dangerous tackle. Still dangerous, and there is a debate there, but as for the sending off, I think it was quite clear.
Let's ask the qualified ref.
I could not disagree more. I am staggered, absolutely staggered. For a start, I watched it on Sky Sports, and everyone in the studio on the commentary team were going, well, you know, it's reckless, therefore, you know, as the rules stand, he has to go. Well, if you agree it was reckless, and it was borderline even reckless. Reckless means a yellow card, doesn't mean a sending off, so that was all rubbish being spoken. Then on Match of the Day 2, there wasn't even a debate. They're all going, absolutely dreadful, you know, the way the rules are, he has to go. Joe Cole tackled with his thigh. That doesn't hurt anybody at all. Flabby thighs don't hurt. It was from every angle I could see. And the more I watched it, the more... It was not dangerous. Please explain to me why being tackled by a thigh is dangerous. It was slightly clumsy and slightly over-exuberant, and the chap was not hurt at all. I don't know, they were having an egg-shaped bruise on his shin. He came out and looked absolutely fine.
Excuse me. Sorry, Alison, I'm going to have to pull you up here because I'm a big fan of a certain former referee who we can't name because he works for another newspaper, but who once gave out 3 yellow cards in a World Cup game. But you made the point. It doesn't matter if Koscielny's hurt or not. What does that have to do with whether it's a yellow or red card?
It's evidence that maybe it was, even though it didn't look it, that it was dangerous. It was not dangerous.
Well, because he doesn't get hurt, it's not dangerous.
No, it's
so if
part,
I juggle chain shots in front of your hat, in front of your head, and I don't catch
it. After the event, you want to weigh up every bit of evidence you've got to work out whether you felt it was dangerous or reckless or careless. They're the three types of tackles there are that are worthy of a free kick.
All right, qualified referees out there, I'm really curious about this. Please email us at gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk because I want to know, do you really have to consider whether somebody gets hurt or not in assessing whether a foul has been committed?
No, I'm saying after the event when we're talking about what was it. Obviously, one look at it from the referee's point of view, that's fine. I'm not going to criticise the referee. He has one look at it and he has to make a decision. But having seen it from lots of different angles, it was not a dangerous tackle.
Doesn't that say it all, though? I mean, Alison, as a qualified referee, and you've qualified far more recently than Graham Pohl or Martin Atkinson, you know, there is the inconsistency of different referees looking at it and saying, it is and it isn't. And you can look at the Jack Wilshere tackle, and some would say that was a red card, some would say it isn't. And it, you know, there is that huge grey area. It is a question of interpretation. I would interpret it as a red card challenge, and others wouldn't.
Roy Hodgson, so far from what we've seen against the Robots in the Europa League and against Liverpool, the idea seems to be this 4-2-3-1. Joe Cole with license to roam behind the lone striker and two wingers, whether it's Count Jovanovic or whatever. And that also has implications because it means Steven Gerrard further back alongside the holding midfielder. Now, even though Hodgson denies it, we're all assuming Mascherano's going to be sold. My question is then, that leaves space for one other holding midfielder, whether it's Poulsen or Lucas or the forgotten man, AA, Aquilani. Is this a clever formation? What do we make of this? Gerrard deeper and Cole in the hole. Alison?
Well, I don't like it. I think Cole was completely bypassed in the first half. I mean, it's only one half at the Premier League with Liverpool, but it was like, oh, okay, let's see what Joe Cole can do. Okay, I'll wait another 10 minutes. It didn't work for him at all, and I think Joe Cole is a bit of one of those enigmas. I think it's going to be very difficult for Roy Hodgson to find the perfect place for him to play in the team. And if you analyse the skills that Cole has, because he can't score goals, he's not a great finisher, he's not even a very terribly perceptive passer. What he can do is he's got very good close control and he draws players in. And I suspect that for a player like that, you should be playing him in a more withdrawn central midfield role. So ideally, he would play behind a rampaging Gerrard, allowing Gerrard to pick up loose balls and so on. It's only 45 minutes, but in those 45 minutes, I did not think it worked. Swap them round.
Ollie, what would you do with Joe Cole? What do you think of this Hodgson experiment?
Well, I don't think it's an experiment, really. I think that's the role that he was brought to play, and I think that was how they sold the move to him, that you're going to be playing in this position, which is the position he's always wanted to play in. And I think if you look at it, and if you look at yesterday's game, although it was only 45 minutes, but also if you look at Joe Cole's whole career, he's never really played that role. And so you start to ask yourself, well, why hasn't he played that role? And to me, I mean, he does have an obvious talent. He has great, what you would call flair or trickery, or, you know, he's great for, as Alison said, close control and little layoffs and so on, you know, in crowded areas. But he's not a very perceptive player. He's not a hugely intelligent, creative player in that sense. So people often look at Cole and say, oh, he's been wasted by English football. What do we do with Joe Cole? We try to turn him into a winger because we're not willing to trust people like that in the middle of the pitch. And I think Joe Cole, I mean, perhaps that's English football's failure, that they haven't coached him to be better, you know, in terms of from his youth, not so much the last few years, but he just doesn't seem to have developed into the kind of player that can play that role. And to me, I don't see that working particularly well in big games. I can see it working in games where Liverpool have a lot of the ball and he can find a lot of space, but I don't think he's terribly good at finding space.
I would tend to agree with that and add to it the fact that it's a nice idea, and I agree his natural skills. Had he been born in Brazil, he would have been playing that role, but because...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
He was shoehorned in England. It has affected him. I think he could still play that role. I just don't know that if he can play it at a big club, because if you're Chelsea, you're not going to disassemble your side to find a spot for Joe Cole. It's just not worth it. But what I'm interested in, I want to hear from you, Raoul, is what's the effect here on Steven Gerrard? Is Gerrard still Liverpool's most important player? We're asking him to go play a different position, a position which Rafa Benitez certainly seemed to think that wasn't ideally suited for him.
I think Gerrard throughout his career has constantly been a victim of his own versatility, that he can play all these different roles. So he's a player who is flexible from the manager's perspective in terms of their options. So when it comes down to accommodating other players, he has been moved around. And I think it's a very controversial thing to do in this instance, particularly when you look at Joe Cole's record in terms of fitness and in terms of playing full 90 minutes. There's a stat today in the game which says he's only actually played 90 minutes 32 times.
That's because he keeps getting substituted. I'm only talking about Steven Gerrard, enough Joe Cole. It's not his fault, right?
No, but
he's freed of the evil Ancelotti and the evil Avram Grant and the evil Goose Hiddink and the evil Scolari and the evil Mourinho who kept substituting him.
It's not just substitution.
Let's talk about Gerrard. Gerrard's more important than Joe Cole.
No,
why does nobody want to talk about Gerrard?
Because the wider point is if you create a system based around Joe Cole, you're going to impinge on Steven Gerrard. And I think given Cole's record in terms of fitness, if you create that system, you're not going to be able to play that system that often, because basically Joe Cole isn't going to be fit enough to do it. And therefore, I think it's wrong to impinge on Gerrard when he's your key player. You should be building the team around him.
You talk about impinging on Gerrard, but that is the position that Gerrard wants to play. And I know he's played extremely well at times over the past few years, albeit not last season, in that more attacking role but behind Torres. But if you ask Steven Gerrard where he wants to play week in, week out, it's that central midfield role alongside a probably more dedicated holding player. And that's where, that appears to be his future under Hodgson. I don't think he was necessarily played out of position by Benitez. I think that's a bit of a myth. But as he sees it, this is his favourite position, and this is the way he wants to play. So I don't think Gerrard will be too devastated at being shunted out of position or anything like that.
Finally, bizarre equaliser at the end. By the way, I felt neither one of these two teams played really particularly well, and I think it doesn't bode well for those who imagine a more open Premier League this season. But obviously Reina spilled it. What was curious is just in the run-up to that, Glenn Johnson had the ball in a right-back position, and he could have hoofed it up the pitch. Instead, he did something which he thought was very clever, which he tried to play the ball off an opponent. It didn't work out. From the ensuing throw-in, the cross came in, which Reina, of course, eventually spilled. There's no concern about Pepe Reina, right? Is there? I mean, he is one of the top two or three goalkeepers in the Premier League, if not the best, right? Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League, and probably on the evidence of last season, perhaps the best. But apart from the two at Manchester City, perhaps. But the if you look at that goal, I mean, people will highlight the way he sort of spilt the ball into the net. I thought the bigger crime, in one sense, was being beaten to the ball by Chamakh, and I think that will probably be what he will be most disappointed with, because it was because of the first error that the second one happened. And you would imagine that someone like Rayner is of a strong enough character to just brush it off. And I saw him walking out of Anfield looking a little bit, you know, a little bit unhappy, but not too not too devastated afterwards. And I don't think whatever Liverpool may or may not do this season, I don't think Rayner is going to be the biggest problem there.
But Ollie, did you see him on the way to the club shop to buy a hat? Because it was the sun that made him make that error.
Interesting point about the hat. Of course, Chris Kirkland, as far as I know, is the only Premier League goalkeeper who regularly wears a hat. And of course, he had an absolute stinker at the weekend.
But they hate wearing them, but there's a certain point at which August late afternoon sunshine will be right in your eyes and you have to wear one.
Of course, because if a big looping ball comes in and you look up, the hat will obviously protect you. Why not wear sunglasses, Alison? Seeing the only club that was actually spending money this summer was Manchester City, courtesy of Sheikh Mansour. And Roberto Mancini went out there and he spent lots of it. Jerome Boateng, Yaya Toure, Super Mario Balotelli, probably James Milner as well, David Silva. List goes on and on. Alexander Kolarov, of course. It's an interesting idea here because, you know, you're basically given a blank check. You said, you know, they tell you go and build a team. And first thought that comes to mind, Ollie, is that when Mark Hughes was in that position, he tried to go for sort of, you know, more veteran players, proven players, players who played in the Premier League, players who were maybe a little bit older. Instead, Mancini's gone out there, and I think every single player he's bought, except for Yaya Toure, is 24 or younger. He seems to be acting like a man who's trying to build long-term and who thinks he'll be in a job in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think if you look at, as you say, if you look at the signings this summer and last summer, I think the profile is completely different. If you look at last summer, it was Gareth Barry, Julian Lescott, Toure, Adebayor, Tevez, all players who had played for big Premier League clubs and were accustomed to everything that the Premier League is about. You know, likewise with Bellamy and Given, who he had signed the previous January. And so that seems to be the philosophy under Hughes, and it seems to have changed quite dramatically to one of let's sign the young players with potential to improve. They're all imports, really, although they're trying to get James Milner as well, Balotelli, Kolarov, as you say, Silva. And I mean, you would think really it would be a case of a case of balancing those two approaches. Instead, they've gone from one extreme to the other, and it's almost like they're starting again. And I mean, there are similarities really with what Chelsea tried to do in their second summer under Abramovich when they signed Cech and Robin and people like that. But it's the difference is that City aren't building on the same kind of foundations that Chelsea were. It's still quite different, and it'll be very interesting to see how it works.
Well, is there an issue of balance there? Because, I mean, a number of the guys who were more mid-career types that Hughes signed, of course, are still there. I mean, Adebayor is still there, Tevez is still there, Barry's still there, and he's now rounding it out with younger players. You could make that case, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think you certainly could. I think the
so Ollie's wrong.
No, I think Ollie has a fair point, but I think the real issue for Mancini is going to be A, finding his best 11, and B, keeping his squad happy. He's got all these players, whether they're up and coming, whether they're proven, they're going to want to be playing. And I think his biggest issue, as has been shown with Bellamy in the summer, with Given and his unhappiness, is how can all these egos, all these top stars, be moulded together in a squad that can actually function.
I'm not going to go and knock Given for having an ego. I completely understand if he's not the number one. I think he's right to leave. I don't think there's an issue of ego there because you only have one starting goalkeeper. Bellamy, perhaps a slightly different case. But as an approach, is it the right approach? Or is it just down to whether he signed the wrong players?
I'm a bit cynical. I sort of feel young players, it's easier to have their heads turned by the riches on offer at a club like City. I think more mature, well-renowned, highly talented players will be thinking it's a bit of a risk to join City. I'm not going to take that risk. Wherever I am doing well with my reputation, I'm more likely to win something or get a better rating at the end of the season than I am going to City. It's if you're a top mature player, why would you go to City? Why would you go? Because the risks are too high. We don't know. We have no idea if he can blend all those different types of players from different cultures, different ages. There's too many of them on high salaries. It's a risk. So he has to sign young players whose heads can be turned. And obviously he's the sort of manager who feels he can mould younger players better and make them play to the system he wants. He's not got on with some of the players he's inherited from Hughes. So he's burned his fingers there. Although Bellamy just seems to get cross with anyone who's new, doesn't he? So it's not exactly anti-Mancini. But yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's focused on the goalkeeper situation at City because it epitomises it, the dilemma beautifully. You've got it's supposed to be good, isn't it, to have two great players in every position? But it's already a major headache for that club.
Well, I'm not sure we can really blame Mancini for the goalkeeping situation when, in fact, he inherited both goalkeepers and both happened to be good. But I wanted to throw something else out there, which is, you know, it's interesting. You said, well, you know, you would have thought veteran players would want to play for bigger clubs and win things. I wonder about that because there's so little money right now in football, with the exception of Manchester City, that it's great to be a veteran player who wants to win things. But unless you play for Barcelona, Real Madrid, United, Chelsea, maybe Bayern, maybe Inter Milan, you're not going to win anything this year, realistically. So at that point, why not take the money and go to Manchester City? And I think that's actually what Mancini wanted to avoid, is somebody who'd come and treat his club like a cash machine. Am I wrong, Ollie?
No, I think you're right. And I've also got to say, I do expect City to win something this season. I know that is, if you'd made that prediction every year for the last whatever it is, 35 years now, 34 years, you'd have ended up looking rather silly. But I think they'll win something, whether it's the Europa League, FA Cup, Carling Cup, whatever. I don't think they'll be... I could see them being a decent team in the Premier League and better than last season. So, I mean, if people are saying he would be better off joining Liverpool, or, you know, players would be better off joining Liverpool or Arsenal or, I don't know, Atletico Madrid or something, I don't think they're right.
The one conundrum for me is, and you have to take my word on it because we haven't really seen it yet, but Mancini's body of work suggests that he actually is quite an attacking player who plays good football. But one of my big concerns is he does it by getting a lot, by working a lot tactically with the players, doing double sessions and so on. So the idea is that when they break or when they have the ball, everybody's moving in unison, you know where everybody is, and it's really attractive to watch, actually, when he pulls it off. But the problem is he hasn't had a chance to do that yet at City. And with so many players, I'm not sure he's going to get a chance. I normally don't have a problem with big squads, but I cannot, if Milner comes, I cannot for the life of me figure out how on God's green earth he's going to accommodate all these guys inside, because I believe Premier League rules suggest you still can only play with 11 players. Am I right? So how's he going to do it? How would your front six for City look, assuming they sign Milner?
Well, I think you'd have Adebayor. You'd have Tevez. Then you get into difficulties behind that. I mean, De Jong from the World Cup was awesome, the form he showed there. Silva, we've got to wait and see. We've got to see how he adapts to the Premier League. Wright Phillips, you'd probably say no, with the give the quality they got. Barry, yes, he does that role very well. And then you'd probably want Milner. So I would say that's how I'd go for it.
Sorry, Super Mario. You're stuck on the bench.
So everyone seems to be thinking that... or arguing that Gareth Barry is still a great player to have. I think he's gone off the boil massively. No? No one else seen that? Thought he was dreadful on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the World Cup, I mean, he was pretty dreadful there, but he wasn't fit. I don't think he sort of illuminated Manchester City last season by any means, but he was okay. And I could see a situation where when they're playing only two central midfielders in there, it will be Touré and De Jong, and maybe and maybe Milner and others further forward. But I mean, I don't think he's a bad person for them to have in their squad. Certainly, I certainly think that if you offered him to Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, I think they would take him.
Rotating your squad is kind of a difficult sell in this country, with the exception of Sir Alex Ferguson, who's been doing it for a year, but nobody notices. Anytime somebody else does it, unless they go and they win 6-0 the way Chelsea did at the weekend, you're going to get people coming out and saying, you don't know what his best 11 is. You got to play every week, blah, 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 because that's the punditocracy we have. So why does Mancini make this difficult for himself?
I don't think that's making it difficult for himself. I would like to think that the punditocracy, as you call it, is a little bit more enlightened than that these days. Is it not? No? Okay. Well, maybe here we are. But one point I would make as well about City is that I think a lot of it will depend on what role they find for Adebayor. Because Adebayor is somebody who, if he's playing every week and he's happy and he's in the mood, would be a great player. But if you're saying to him, you're going to play one game every three or you're going to be on the bench most weeks, I could see him being a disaster. He's not that kind of player who can turn it on when asked to. He's a type of player who's either in the mood or he isn't. And to me, he could be a problem if he's not playing regularly enough to build up his confidence and his enthusiasm.
All right, well, let's wrap this up by getting everybody's view on where City are going to finish in the Premier League this season. One word answers, please, Alison.
Fifth.
Rao.
Fifth.
Ollie.
Third.
Gab. Third. All righty. All right, y'all know what's up next, so let's get rolling. Manchester United have spent £7.4 million on Bebe, a winger who last season played in the Portuguese third division and who was available for nothing just 6 weeks ago. Ollie, you write about this in today's game. Care to elaborate?
Well, I think you say it all. A winger who played in the Portuguese third division and was available for nothing 6 weeks ago, and to spend £7.4 million on him when you're sort of turning your nose up at every other price in the transfer market, saying that perhaps Ozil is too expensive, Kadira is too expensive at £11 million or whatever he was. I just think it's strange that United have this policy where they're taking gambles on completely, completely unproven players. It's not a Ronaldo case or a Schmeichel case. It's completely, completely unproven players.
The bell, of course, goes off when you go too long. Ollie.
Gab, Chelsea welcomed back old boy Roberto Di Matteo in the West Brom and then promptly beat them 6-0. Was it a case of Carlo Ancelotti's crew picking up where they left off?
Yeah, it looked that way and I was there. And in fact, they absolutely shocked me because I thought, you know, Lampard had a bad World Cup, Terry had a bad World Cup. I thought he'd have to pick their morales up, Drogba coming off the injury, Malouda the nightmare, Anelka the even greater nightmare. And yet it was like nothing had ever changed. And on top of that, they have the absolute monster who's Michael Essien in midfield. Hat-trick for Drogba, couldn't be a better start to the season. Alisson.
Spurs probably should have had all 3 points against City, but Brazilian midfielder Sandro is Harry Redknapp's, not Sandro's wife, only signing so far. Raul, if you were advising Harry, who would you tell him to buy?
Striker, first of all. Keane is clearly not what the player he was. Pavlyuchenko, jury's still out. He should go for a big-name striker if the money is there. One name, Diego Forlan, great World Cup. Would suit Spurs perfectly, would get them a lot of goals. Another one from left field, but there's lots of strikers now at Manchester United. What about trying to get Berbatov back?
Raul.
When Roy Keane was in charge of Sunderland, he said he wouldn't sell Kenwyn Jones for £50 million. Steve Bruce evidently felt differently, dropping him last year and then flogging him to Stoke for £8 million. Jones injured himself during Stoke's 2-1 loss to Wolves. Alisson, how sorry do you feel for the big man?
Well, if he's badly injured, I feel very sorry for him, obviously. But I think he's made the right move. I'm a big fan of Tony Pulis. Kenwyn Jones, I think he's quite clearly very, very talented and he just needs handling the right way. By all accounts, their early relationship, the early days of their relationship was going very well. So it is a big loss to both sides.
Thanks to my guests today, Alisson Rudd, making his debut, Raul Simons, and from Halifax, Oliver Kaye. And please, if you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Just email the show at gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. I'll be back next week, of course, with plenty more reaction to the new season and another full weekend of Premiership fixtures. Till then, toodaloo.
you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.